This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Ladies Who London. Or actually this week, Lady Who Londons. This is Fiona here on my Todd. Slightly rich, actually, frankly. Alex said, yeah, come and be a co-host. Yeah, it's all good. And then a couple of weeks later, she scarpers and leaves me holding the ropes doing an episode. So if there is anything a bit skew-iff about today's episode, then it's because I'm learning the ropes as I go. But she does have a good reason. She's had a little bit of surgery. And the good news is she's back at home, recuperating. It's all well, all good. And she should be back with us next week. She does have a little fleeting cameo in today's episode. And today we have two guests, and very excitingly, maybe slightly overambitiously. So again, it's a slightly longish episode. So I'm going to leave all admin and correspondence and any other business until next week and dive straight in. The second interview is with David Heifer, the artist. And the first interview kind of explains itself in the opening a couple of sentences. So I'm going to leave it at that and jump in to the first of today's two interviews. Enjoy. Today on the podcast, we are not looking at the little bits of London and the little quirky details that we sometimes do. Today, we are going to be talking about London on a grand scale because, very excitingly, I'm joined today by Liz Scott, who is the curator of Big City, which is the exhibition on at the moment at the Guildhall Art Gallery, which, as the name suggests, it's big scale paintings of London on a grand scale. That's so hello Liz.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's really lovely. It's one of those exhibitions that sort of the title caught my eye, and the Guildhall has, I think, often has quite intriguing exhibitions that are quite kind of specifically focused in a way, and this seemed like one of those. Really interesting idea.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and I'm glad you picked that up, because when I joined the gallery in 2017, and one of the things looking at the gallery's collection that I kind of wanted to really draw out was our connection to London, because we have one of the largest collections of London paintings in the world, and whilst we also have a really rich Victorian collection as well, but I thought, well, why don't we really make that a strength and have a kind of thread of London through some of our exhibitions. So it's kind of London, which could be very explicit, like one of our previous shows, Architecture of London, or The Big City, mm-hmm. or more implicit, yep. like our show about Noel Coward, who was a London-born lad.
So yes, that's yeah, which connection. was also fabulous. I saw that one as well. And the glorious kind of the lovely dressing gowns and the very opulent.
Yes, I mean, I think it was one of those shows that really caught everyone's imagination. And even if you weren't a Noel Coward fan necessarily, I think you left it as one. But also, you could just really appreciate the displays, like the costumes, and just the visual impact of everything as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was thinking, for people who don't know the Guildhall Art Gallery, it's not. I think it's fair to say, not like if you said I'm going to go to a gallery in London, it's probably not the one that's right at the top of your list. And it, but tell us more. Tell us where it is to start
yes.
with.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's in the City of London, or also known as the Square Mile. We are actually the gallery that houses the City of London Corporation's art collection. And so the original gallery opened in the Victorian period in 1886, and it was then called the City of London Fine Art Gallery. So quite a mouthful, and now
okay,
known as the Guildhall Art Gallery. And you can go to any of the kind of tube stations in the city, and we're basically a 5 minute walk from there, if less. We, as I say, we house the City of London Corporation's art collection, but we also have a Roman amphitheatre in our basement as well.
Yes, I was going to come onto that.
Yes, yeah. But I always say we're this unique kind of mixture of art and archaeology that I think not many other places could boast that.
Something for everyone.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. So yeah, let's talk about the amphitheatre, because it wasn't there in the Victorian gallery.
No. So yeah, it was kind of one of these brilliant discoveries. After the kind of going giving you a bit of background to it, after the there was bomb damage in 1940, and the Victorian Gallery sustained a lot of damage then, but then it was almost entirely destroyed by a fire during a severe air raid in 1941. Although large parts of the collection were removed to underground storage in Wiltshire, we still lost quite a significant amount. 164 artworks, including 20 sculptures, were lost.
So
after that, a temporary structure was built on the cleared site in 1946. And this structure was used as a ceremonial venue and exhibition space. But it wasn't until 1985 that the city decided to redevelop the site. And as work commenced, like anywhere else in the City of London, you can't put a shovel in the ground without hitting some archaeology.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. You know, during the archaeological dig, which took place in preparation for the construction of the new gallery building, the remains of London's Roman amphitheatre was discovered. And this was an incredibly significant find. I think I can't stress that enough, because archaeologists had been searching for this amphitheatre for over 100 years.
You really hit the jackpot.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and for me, it's just remarkable that it was found in the 80s. That's just so strange to think of as well. And archaeologists were always thinking, it's Londinium. It must have had an amphitheatre. It was an important Roman city, it must have had one. But as I say, it remained lost for over 1,500 years until it was finally found in 1988. And what's really interesting is we have an artwork in the collection titled Londinium Romanum, and it's painted in 1959 by the artist Alan Sorrell. He's perhaps best known for his archaeological illustrations in particular his detailed reconstructions of Roman Britain, which were really backed up by research as well. And the painting we have depicts Roman London in the 3rd century AD, and it shows examples of other Roman remains that had been excavated up to the 50s around the Wood Street area of the city. But because of its date, it doesn't show the amphitheatre. So in some ways, it's this really accurate reconstruction, but minus the amphitheatre. And so it's still valuable. It's still valuable, but it's also quite an entertaining image because of that.
And a real sort of slice of what we knew at that moment in history when it was done.
Yeah. Exactly.
And quite a lot of the Roman stuff was rediscovered during the war, wasn't it? Because of the bomb damage and things. So it's extraordinary that they didn't find the amphitheatre then, really, as well.
Exactly. Especially if you think that, especially our part of the city, and the gallery in particular had two really badly damaged, two bouts of bad damage kind of during the Blitz, still wasn't found. It just feels like, okay, it wanted to be found in the 80s. It was the right moment for it. It was supposed to be our basement galleries, and it's like, I wouldn't pass up having a Roman amphitheatre in my basement. But sometimes when you're trying to find space for a painting, it does make you think, oh, we could have had that space.
Put it in somewhere. Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, as a guide, I'm very often going through the Guildhall Yard and I kind of tend to talk about it. And it's a story that I'm very familiar with, but it is extraordinary when you step back and think about it. And then there's also that beautiful theatrical kind of the grey slate circle around the Guildhall Yard. And you can say to people, that's the shape of the amphitheatre, 20 foot down,
yes.
You know, and it's really nicely done.
Oh, thank you. And that's what we love pointing that out. And especially to we have schools that come to the amphitheatre a lot as well.
Yeah.
The Romans are on the curriculum also, but we always start in the front in Guildhall Yard and point out the circle, and then our education officer, he actually asks the pupils to kind of walk as they walk down to count the steps that they take as well, to re-give that sense of you're kind of going back in time, but also how deep you're going,
and
actually, it's 20 feet below ground. But what I really love is that in the amphitheatre, you are walking at Roman ground level. I mean, that to me is just so special. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing I've always slightly wondered about it, because when you go into the amphitheatre kind of room, you sort of go through the gallery entrance, down some stairs, and then through a kind of glass door it's quite a dark space. It's quite kind of dramatic and theatrical. And then the amphitheatre, so that, you know, it's kind of the footprint of the layout of the entrance and some of the stones and things. It's not like the full size walls or seats but
it's not the Colosseum.
No. But you can see where the entrance would have been and the rooms kind of off the entrance either side and the drains and things. Yes. And then there's opposite, there's some quite sort of modern graphics kind of showing where the seats would be and someone sitting. And I've always wondered how contentious it was, that decision to use quite sort of sleek minimalist figures in the graphics against the old stones.
It's really interesting because I was talking to someone who was an archaeologist working on the site, and then he also did the interpretation afterwards, and he was saying that in that phase he was very minimalist in the way he interpreted archaeology.
Okay.
And he very much wanted to keep the drama because that is exactly what happened in amphitheatres. It was entertainment, but of the most dramatic kind, you know, as well.
Yeah.
And then he also wanted to allow visitors to really use their imagination as well. And so it's kind of, it's showing you what could have taken place, but you could also think about it and then kind of just start having in your mind kind of creating these scenarios as well.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. That works. And it is free to visit, isn't it? It's one of those things you have to, you know, you go in through the doors, and so if you were walking past in a way, you might not realise that anyone can just stroll in and go and see this extraordinary space.
Yes, yeah, it's free. The gallery and the amphitheatre are completely free. We're open 7 days a week as well. And so and we really, I kind of really want to position the gallery as a gallery for about London for London, because that's such a core of our of what we do, and like with the stories that we're telling through the artwork or through the amphitheatre. You can literally see, kind of discover 2,000 years of London's history on our site. I think that's one of our real strong points, and the way that you can access London's history in different ways through the archaeology and through the art.
One thing I often kind of stress to people as well is that it's because it started as the kind of the government collection for the city, that it could be pictures of Lord Mayors, it could, you know, but it's not. You've got a much wider range of artists and pictures than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it's not to say we don't have pictures of Lord Mayors.
No.
we do have that, but you're absolutely right that we the collection is so much more than that as well. I like to say that I kind of like to group our collection into four broad categories. Mm-hmm. One is London, one is Victorian, the other is Matthew Smith, and then 17th century Dutch and Flemish, which is, it might sound like quite a strange mix. And then, like most other museums and galleries, we have lots of other works that fall in between those divisions as well, you know, just as things were collected over over 200 years of having an art gallery, but also the fact that although the gallery opened in 1886, the actual collection started 200 years before that, and the origins of the collection are actually date for to 1670. The Court of Aldermen commissioned 22 paintings to hang in the newly restored Guildhall following the Great Fire, and these were portraits of fire judges. These are 22 men who had been appointed to assess compensation claims following the Great Fire in 1666. Yeah. And so these portraits are actually the inception of the City of London Corporation's art collection. And you know, and so this like special commission. And the collection continued to grow from that. It now numbers around 4,500 works of art. And
wow. Okay.
It includes oil paintings, works on paper, sculpture, photography, tapestries. You know, and so it's quite extensive. And we have the art gallery and our store is on site. But as the art gallery, we also look after the corporation's collections across their sites as well. So we look after the collection at Mansion House and at Bailey. Yeah. So it's quite an expansive role as well.
Yeah. So what proportion of the collection is on display normally?
So we've got around 4,500 and we usually have around 200 to 250 works. Okay. Play. It depends on what the temporary exhibition is. And I think if you that might not sound like a lot, but actually in terms of percentages, that's not too bad, because I think other places sometimes have 1%.
Right. Yeah.
But that's at the gallery. We obviously have other works of art on display elsewhere at Bailey, etc. But I think as you've been to the gallery, you'll see that some of our works are not small as well.
No, so, indeed. Kind of,
if we had enough wall space, we would hang much more. But it's, we are slightly limited. For instance, we have John Singleton Copley's Defeat of the Floating Batteries of Gibraltar, which measures 8 metres by over 5 metres.
Yeah,
massive.
And wasn't that... I mean, in a way, this ties in very much with the big city, because they are the sort of monumental paintings. But also when you were saying about the rebuilding of the gallery after the, in the 80s, it's very clearly designed around that painting, isn't it?
Yes.
So, it takes up one whole wall and you can look at it from above or below.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at it. Yeah. if you want to look at it in any kind of detail as well. But you're exactly right. We've got a double height ceiling because of that artwork. And it's the only way it can come in and out of the building is for it to be taken off its stretcher and rolled up. It's just so huge. But interestingly, the Victorian Gallery, where we've got a permanent display of Victorian works, that ceiling is actually 12, I think it's 12 foot high, and that's to accommodate the pikes from the pikemen when they the Lord Mayor. And so, there's also things like that. So there's kind of a dual purpose for having such a
Well, maybe that perfectly brings us on to the big city exhibition then. So what was the what was the first idea that kind of brought this about?
Well, one of the reasons for curating the show is that at the Guildhall Art Gallery we hold one of the most extensive collections of London paintings in the world. So I think we should be putting on more shows about London, in particular through the lens of art. As well as being the home of one of the largest oil paintings on display in the UK, which is the Copley.
Yeah.
And so in that way, the Big City is a special exhibition that combines both of these unique aspects of the gallery's collection. And it celebrates artists who paint London on this huge scale, creating these immersive works that dominate interior spaces, whilst also being an opportunity for us to showcase some of these paintings, like the largest paintings in our collection. I know that kind of talking to colleagues about it, some of them have said, "Oh, yeah, was it quite limiting? Yeah, working within that kind of criteria of large scale artworks." And I'd say it wasn't actually, because the collection has such a variety within that criteria. So for me, it was actually there's a lot of scope and there's a range of artists working on very different subjects, but at a large scale. And so you'll have someone like Frank Salisbury, who in his day was the artist, like the go-to artist for portraits. He painted over 800 of some of the most notable figures of the time, as well as ceremonial events. But he's virtually unheard of, I would say, now. And unless, you know, it's kind of people who know British art or have a particular interest in that area, he isn't kind of like, he isn't a household name like he would kind of say a constable or, you know, etc. But his great forte was painting large canvases of ceremonial events and pageantry, and so he was painting these huge grand occasions on huge canvases. But then you'll have other artists like David Heifer, who paints huge canvases of tower blocks in London, and is really exploring this kind of almost austere grandeur of urban London. And there's just that complete contrast of these grand occasions to these sort of tower blocks in London, that, and it's really, for me, it was really interesting, that kind of interplay of these occasions, which are sometimes open to the public if they're in the kind of arena of the street, but sometimes closed off because you have to be invited to them. Like we have a work by Terence Kinnaird of the Coronation Lunch at the Great Hall in Guildhall. But you would have had to be invited to that. But then with David's work, that they are a piece of architecture that anyone would recognise. And
might not stop to look at.
Yes.
So by putting it on the canvas, you kind of see it in a whole different way.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And that's where there's another section in the exhibition called Larger Than Life. And it's where artists have chosen to depict what would seemingly be quiet moments in London, like crossing a street. You know, we've got a piece called Walk by Oliver Bevin, and it's of the pedestrian crossing at Barbican outside the station. It's really interesting that they are sort of wanting to take these quiet moments, but to specifically convey them on large canvases. And so then you kind of get that really interesting juxtaposition, don't you, of kind of these small moments at a large scale, and the idea that it doesn't have to just be these grand occasions that are captured this way, but it could be these small moments.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyday life and every, you know, in any person as well.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, that's really lovely. And I was looking up about Terence Kinnaird, because when we came to the gallery, there's those two by him that are like both sort of banquet type things.
Yes.
And then I was surprised to see actually that he actually made his name doing kind of railway, and it was quite industrial art places that he was doing first. But there's this lovely story about him that he always includes a mouse, or after a certain point he started including a mouse.
It's actually a really lovely story, and it's really interesting because it's got a connection to one of the works we have, which is the Coronation Luncheon, and it was done in 1953, and that's when he started to paint the mice in to his works.
That was the first one.
It wasn't the first, it was in that period. Round. And that's what's interesting. Yeah. It was really very much in that period, because one of Kinnaird's most celebrated commissions was the official picture of the coronation of Elizabeth II in 1953. And it's in the Royal Collection right now. And
suitably topical.
Exactly. And one day, Kinnaird was painting the huge canvas, because it's actually a really large painting, and his cat brought in a dead field mouse, and he kind of dropped it by his feet, and as a distraction almost, because he'd kind of been battling this huge canvas, Kinnaird decided to paint a portrait of the mouse, and subsequently the mouse kind of became his signature or trademark, and it can be found in every one of his paintings after 1953. And so we've got the mice now paintings, and it's actually been such a lovely part of the exhibition, is visitors trying to find the mice.
And I'm just going to pause the interview with Liz there for a moment so you can hear what happened when we were in the gallery. Alex and I are just going to have a look for the mouse.
Going on a mouse hunt.
Yeah. So this is about 5 foot wide, this painting.
give you a sense of scale, and the bottom third is full of people excitedly eating their dinner.
I think it's
finery.
6 foot wide, I would say, because that's about five six. Feet tall, isn't it?
Oh, okay, oh, that's true. Even
I don't know. It's big.
It's big. And then the top kind of four-fifths of the painting is the sort of the guild hall.
2.5 metres wide and just shy of 2 metres tall.
There you go. And I'm...
Found it. I found the mouse.
She's found the mouse. There, I see.
Mouse.
Yay.
I love that you've put the microphone towards the mouse. Let me take a photo of the mouse. That's not going to work.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
I mean, it's such a lovely way, I think, of visitors really looking at the picture in detail as well, and, and really close up. And I think Cuneo's such the perfect artist for that, because he paints these really large canvases of these really large events with hundreds of people. But in all of those individual people, he really kind of puts their personality into it. And even if it's just literally a smudge, and somehow you get a sense of the person.
And And also, because presumably, like, anyone who is in that painting could go and look at it and go, oh, but look, oh, it didn't do me properly. Or look, I was looking at my own face.
Yeah.
And I love those really grand ceremonial ones where you've got masses of people and they're all sort of slightly turning to face the portrait in a slightly odd way. But, you know, you can see that they are absolutely individual portraits.
Yes. Yeah.
Just thousands of them.
Exactly.
And then, completely the other kind of extreme with David Heffer's, which are practically abstract, or almost abstract in a way. They're so kind of chunky.
They are, yeah. And it's interesting that he doesn't include people in his works. You know, so you won't, you know, I think there are examples where he did in the past, but he doesn't include, like, so you won't necessarily see a figure in pieces. But I always think, but despite that, I think they're also deeply, you know, they are actually re-peopled as well, because they are these tower blocks, and he will put the detail of different curtains and things like that in there, which actually it shows people with the absence of the actual figures.
It's a glimpse of the life inside the windows.
Exactly.
Which
and that's what I love about his work as well. And it's just that idea that it represents so many people's lives in that piece as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to all being well. I should be meeting him next week. So, listeners, stay tuned, because that will be coming up next after this, as it were. So, I'm very much looking forward to that. Now, I was going to ask you as well, just kind of before we finish, that there's also is it called the Heritage Gallery? Have I named that right? The bit just sort of on the way to the amphitheatre, where you have the opportunity to do it's a changing collection, isn't it? But like, really kind of important stuff, it seems like.
Yes, no, absolutely. And so you're absolutely right. The Heritage Gallery, it's based in the Art Gallery, and it's an opportunity for visitors to view treasures from the collection of the London Metropolitan Archives, which is also owned by the City of London Corporation. And it is basically a research centre, which holds the historical archives of all kinds of businesses, schools, hospitals, charities, and other organisations from the London area.
Mm-hmm.
It has over 100 kilometres of documents, you know, including maps and photographs. And the earliest one dates back to 1067, which, again, you know, it just sort of blows your mind when you hear things like that.
Yeah, that's astonishing. Presumably that's kept in a very secure
room,
controlled, safe,
very secure, and so with the, because the London Metropolitan Archives, being an archive and such a huge collection, they are based at 40 Northampton Road, and people can go there. They've got an exhibition space there, but they also have it's three large showcases in the Heritage Gallery, which allows for a kind of trio of displays. And as you say, it changes regularly.
Yeah.
We've had all sorts of amazing items on display, from Shakespeare's signature to the Magna Carta to the William Charter. It's just unbelievable. And usually with the display changes, they will relate to an anniversary, sometimes not, but it's quite nice that they usually relate to something that's happening that year or that month. So for instance, the current display, which runs to the 28th of April, it remembers two Londoners on the anniversaries of their deaths. One of them being Richard Whittington,
who we did the pod about two, three weeks ago. It was all about Richard Whittington.
And so you'll be able to see his last will and testament. And you'll also be able to see his seal, which is on a receipt for a manor house in Hertfordshire. You also have a book recording his third election. As you know, and as your listeners will know, he was four-time Lord Mayor.
So that was his third
election.
There's something about him as well, because of the sort of pantomime, he feels like a fictional character to a lot of people. People are sometimes quite surprised to hear he was real. So to actually see, you know, his will and things like that are concretely related, physically, tangibly related to him as a person, it's such an extraordinary possibility.
Exactly. I mean, and as you say, it is that tangible kind of presence of the man, but as you say, I've definitely had people, when I've told them that he was a real person and that he was four-time Lord Mayor, like, what?
Sherlock Holmes, he was definitely real, but yeah, Whittington,
And then one of the other displays is for the anniversary of Stephen Lawrence's death. And we've got on display... we've got the minutes from a meeting from his school, which refers to a student's murder committed by individuals motivated by racism. So really significant documents. And then the third display, which this is the one where it's not necessarily related to anniversaries, is the third display is the London County Council Second World War bomb damage map, which is fascinating as a record.
And I have to say, the area that this one, it's Rotherhithe, which is the area where Alex still lives quite close. I used to live. So I think my street might be one street off the bottom of this map that's on display. So again, I looked at it this morning. I was like, fascinating documents. And I think where my flat used to be before the war, it was a pub. And then you look at the bomb damage map and there's a circle right there. And you're like, so that's why there's no pub anymore.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I love about the Heritage Gallery with the art collection as well, is those moments that actually just resonate with some of the visitors, because they've got that personal connection, or that's my street, or I remember that house or that building. And that's what I really love. And I remember... we have this triptych by the artist Julian Perry, and it's of Hackney Marshes, and he painted those in the early 90s, and that whole area looks completely different now. Yeah, you know, it's basically the Olympic Park with lots of high rises. And I showed one of my friends the three pieces when they're on display, and I didn't say anything, and in kind of literally seconds, he had tears in his eyes, because he was saying, it's the Hackney, because he lives in that area. And he's just like, I remember that Hackney Marshes. You know, that's the kind of period that I grew up in. And that immediate connection is just so special. And to be witness to it was just amazing. Yes. And that's where having shows like The Big City, as I say, it's been so wonderfully popular. And I think it's a mixture of seeing London in artworks, but also the fact that you'll see these huge artworks as well, which they haven't been on display as often as I would like, simply because of their sheer size. One of the Salisbury's we have, which is for the coronation of George V, is That is so large. It's nearly 5 meters long, and it needed six technicians to bring it down and then install it. That's the thing. It's not just we can get two people, put it on a wall. It needs a lot of planning, and that's the thing where but because they're so big, they're just awe-inspiring just for their sheer size, and the fact that someone can put paintbrushes to canvas and create something that large, that is what I love as well.
Yeah It's a really lovely exhibition.
Oh, thank you. It's so lovely to hear you kind of hear your experience of the gallery. It's so amazing, and it was really interesting that Mary Beard came to visit the art gallery, and she was saying that her expectation was to see portraits of mayors and royalty, and you know, that's what she was expecting, and then she was completely surprised by what was on display, and she said that she thought the gallery was absolutely amazing. She loved the hang, and it's kind of, that's all you can ask for, is that visitors connect to what we're showing, and I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. And now that the paintings are there, they're going to stay longer, aren't they? So it's been extended.
We're now running it to the first shift of July, and it's purely because of popular demand. The show has been so popular, and we've had people asking for it to be extended, either because they want to come again or they're not going to be in London in April. We've run it to the first shift of July, giving more people the opportunity, and it's also pay what you can as well. We want to make sure the gallery is as welcome to everyone and as accessible as it can be, and so it's pay what you can, so you can pay as little or as much as you like or nothing at all, and that's it. So it really is up to you.
That's quite nice as well. That fits sort of with the range of the paintings that's on display, in a way that it's everybody who's included. So that's good.
Brilliant.
Well, it's been an absolute delight to talk to you today and find out a bit more. And actually, I'm pleased that having been to the gallery, I also know that I'm going back again next week, so I can now go back and have another look again, in sort of better informed look.
Brilliant.
So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll put some, you know, all the links and things like that in with the show notes and people, so everyone can find you easily.
Thank you, and it's been so lovely talking to you. Thank you.
That was my chat with Liz Scott. And as promised, about a week later, I went back to the Guildhall, this time to have a talk with David Heifer. So let's jump straight in to that.
Oh, I'm here with David Heifer, one of the artists featured in the exhibition The Big City. And it's an absolute delight to meet you. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us.
Great pleasure, I may say.
And I say one of the artists featured, but yours... Your painting is the sort of the one that you see when you walk in the front door. There's a sort of the first room, but the doors line up. So as soon as you go in the front door, what you can see is one of your works straight ahead. It's very, very prominent.
Indeed. Well, I think that basically, I think possibly the whole idea for the show came from the fact that I'm at the age whereby I've done a life's work of paintings, and many of them being about London, and having to think about what will happen to them afterwards. And I mean, and once the major museums have bought a piece or two, they aren't necessarily interested in any more necessarily. The Guildhall already had a piece of mine, but I suggested that they take some more of their choice, which they very kindly did.
Right.
So it's basically, it saves my kid less of a month, you know, a nightmare sort of when this great bundle of large paintings, you know, is kind of, will have to be stored and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they very kindly selected four large works, and I think really built the idea of the show around that, really, sort of, hence them placing me fairly sort of central in the work,
yes.
You know, sort of in the exhibition.
Yeah, Absolutely. And yeah. I was talking to Liz, the curator, last week about the gallery and various things. Yeah. I think it's really striking the contrast between the sort of the first room, which is those sort of historical banquets,
exactly.
and then you come into the space where yours are.
Exactly.
And I should explain that the one that you see coming in is of three. It's almost like a triptych.
Yes, it is indeed.
Yes. Did you envisage it as a triptych kind of when you were?
Actually, initially, I thought of it as a diptych because because there's a building this particular building I was looking at was in East London, I liked it because both its front and its back sides were kind of interesting, and also it was fairly anonymous, and because I sometimes worry that if one were to paint famous buildings like the kind of Trellick Tower or something, people might think I was doing it for the wrong reason. So in many ways, I'm happier working and making recordings, if you like, of paintings of buildings which are not known and fairly mundane in some respects.
Yeah.
So I did a couple of paintings of the East and the West Front.
Mm-hmm.
And then and I made a note of the measurements because I thought I might want to do a third one. And those two paintings went off to a show in New York. And while they were over there, I did a kind of north front,
right?
At night,
yeah.
And so I placed that one centrally, so with the east and the west on either side, really.
Yeah, lovely. And there'll be some images to accompany this, so people can have a look. So if you haven't, if you don't know what we're talking about, have a look at the website and things, so you can imagine. But they are kind of tower blocks.
Yes, indeed.
Taken almost to abstraction, you know, the balconies, the windows, very geometric.
Exactly. They're very much about paintings, really, and as you may have noticed, I painted them on a kind of base of concrete.
Yeah.
I would say they're kind of 50% about painting and the history of painting and where it's going and so on, and about 50% about the actual subject matter as such, basically.
Right, okay. And I was intrigued, just now you said if you did the Trellick Tower, people might think it was for the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
So what are the right reasons?
Well, I think the right reasons are simply the fact that I think of myself as a landscape painter.
Right.
I find myself in the city, so I paint the city, really. And you know, it's as simple as that. In fact, my wife has a cottage in France, and for many years we've been going down there in the summer. And when I'm down there, I paint the French landscape.
So, oh, okay.
So that is a big difference, basically.
And do you stroll around, kind of looking for subject matter?
Yes, that's certainly the case. Or drive around, or whatever. I mean, sort of particular views, if you like, or buildings or structures catch my eye, and I think I'm gonna do something about that.
Yeah.
I mean, at the minute I'm working on a piece based on the Robin Hood estate.
Okay.
In East London, and which is now being pulled down.
Yes. So and catch it now while
exactly,
it's
exactly. Yeah. And actually, a lot of my work has been a bit like that. I mean, I've painted buildings which are now all gone, and so they. If they have no other value, they have a kind of historical recording value.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is very much buildings that some people might not appreciate, or we tend to walk past. We don't see.
I mean, I think that in a way, one of the main jobs of a painter is to maybe draw people's attention to finding beauty where they sort of think it doesn't exist, really.
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
And maybe sort of open people's eyes a bit, you know, in that direction.
Yes. Well, absolutely. I think that works for me. How much do you do in situ? Do you do kind of sketches or take photographs and things?
Both, really. I do sketches. I take photographs. More recently. You probably remember that time when huge images began to appear on the backs of buses, which were and that rather sort of quite impressed me, seeing these kind of vast blown up photographs kind of cruising yeah. around London. And so I got in touch with a company which actually made them, and I asked them if I were to give them some photographs, could they blow them up and put them onto canvas for me?
Okay.
And so they said yes. So quite often that's what I do now. I take photographs, send them off, they come back, sort of back to me on canvas, sort of any size I want, really. And then I use that as a kind of reference point. I mean, I don't really necessarily copy the photograph, but actually use it for... to see what's going on in a window or something like that.
And sort of checking back for details.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, before I do lots of drawings, I go out there on a daily basis and sort of make notes of the particular area of a building I was working on and then come back to the studio and paint it.
Yeah.
But I use both, really.
Sure. Exactly. And presumably... things might change during the case of the time that you're...
Well, exactly. I mean, very early painting I did of a tower block started off, and it was painted sort of grey colour, and I came back one day, it's all blue. So I sort of changed my painting halfway down.
Oh, okay.
So it started grey at the top and blue at the bottom.
Ah, right. Yeah, and then the nice shapes and things you might get.
Exactly.
Yes. Ah, fabulous. And it was noticed as well, the painting that's on the site, Castles in the Air,
yes,
is it?
Yes.
That you've also got, so you've got the tower block,
yes.
And then at the front you've got a sort of superimposed, is it a French village? From what
yes, indeed. Yeah? Yes, I mean, that little vignette at the bottom is from a 16th century Italian painting by Lorenzetti.
Okay.
And which was sort of one of those hill towns in central Italy and so on. And certainly in those days they were building tower blocks as well, really.
Yes, and all those sort of bell towers.
Exactly.
And,
so I thought it might be quite amusing to actually try and include that in some way to sort of make the connection. Really.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, with the very early tower blocks I painted, I was doing them very straight and so on. But then, and people would sometimes ask, "What about the people?" And and occasionally I did try and put them on balconies and things like that.
Yeah.
And sketches I'd made of people out there, but it felt a bit illustrational, and I think people would come up to the paintings, look for the people. So, you know, and then sort of go off and not look at the painting anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought that maybe a way of introducing people, or let's say the marks of people, the presence of people, was to introduce graffiti, which of course is an absolutely integral part of the London landscape, basically. You can't but you sort of go past the building without seeing graffiti all over it.
Yeah.
And so very often I start a painting with graffiti, the concrete and the graffiti, and then paint the building a bit, and then maybe reintroduce the graffiti and so on. So it becomes a kind of weaving process, basically. And it's a way of suggesting the kind of human presence, and including things like the Lorenzetti piece that I was talking about, which... the way of kind of enriching the whole idea, basically.
And when you started adding concrete and things, was that did you kind of play around with that for a while, or did you find a sort of technique quite quickly?
Yes, well, it's photography is such an extraordinary medium, and you can do so much with it. And when I started using it to really give me information to help me make the paintings, I thought the one thing that the photography can't do is actually be very physical. And seeing I was spending a lot of time painting subjects which had a very strong kind of material, physical quality to them, I thought it'd be appropriate to actually paint them on kind of shuttered concrete and so on, which you often see in these buildings.
Absolutely.
So that's how I arrived at it, really.
Yeah. Like you said early on, you did sort of much cleaner paintings,
yes.
And then the graffiti and all the stuff sort of creeps in. And is it also the case, do you think, that the buildings have got scruffier
So you're painting what's there now because the buildings are older.
That's a very good point. I mean, of course, the architects can never really ordain or imagine what will happen to the buildings once they build them.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the weather has its way with them, and so they get stained, and apart from the graffiti aspect, things happen to them which they can't foresee. Plus, of course, the people living in them, and it is evident from what's in the windows that you know, that again, that can kind of colour the whole sort of atmosphere of the building, really.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I've certainly been very kind of influenced by that.
And then the other thing that they've got in this exhibition, just at the front of those, the big three we started talking about, yeah, there's the little bird box.
Oh, yes, indeed, yes.
Tell me more about that. Why is...
Well, it was just it was in my garden, and it was knocking around, and I thought, well, in a way, I suppose these buildings, particularly the tower blocks, are a bit like loads of bird boxes kind of jumbled together, and so it seemed appropriate to casually kind of include it in the sort of in the idea, basically.
Yeah.
You know, we all live in bird boxes today, and I quite like the scale of it. It's very small, kind of nestling at the bottom of the building somehow.
So, yeah.
But it's it's not serious, or seemed appropriate, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So did you envisage it going alongside those other three?
Yes, exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's a fabulous contrast.
Exactly.
With them. Certainly.
I mean, when I sent the first two images out of New York, you know, the bird was sort of went with them,
So the paintings that are here, are there, yeah, so they're going to stay in the collection.
Yes,
here
indeed.
Now?
Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed. Yes, yeah. Yes. As I say, the Museum of London have a large diptych of mine, and I thought it'd be also appropriate, you know, if they had some more as well. But at the moment they're shut, so that, you know, so they can't really kind of decide that sort of thing at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that seems appropriate as well. As it seems like you're very much a London,
yes,
artist, so
yes, exactly,
a London gallery
is the right place
for them.
As I say, I would hate to be thought of only as somebody who paints London buildings, because, you know, hence in a way the importance of let's say the French paintings, you know, that I mentioned. So
yeah.
On. But as the whole exercise really is, as I said, 50% about the actual act of painting,
mm-hmm,
and the subject matter simply, you know, a vehicle to hang it on, really.
Yeah, and I suppose the graffiti as well.
Yes, exactly. Contrast the fairly slow, meticulous way of painting the actual buildings or part of the buildings, and then contrast it with the kind of speed of the graffiti and the soft edge against the hard edge, and also the colours. I mean, the colours of the buildings are often quite subdued, and of course the graffiti can be, you know, exactly really, really brightly coloured.
Yeah.
And sort of.
Have you ever been tempted to a bit of street art yourself and graffiti?
Sort of out there.
Yes.
I thought about it.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, you know, sort of Banksy and people have kind of beaten me to it. And
when you started doing the big,
yes,
kind of ones with tower blocks things, was there anyone else doing similar things, or did people kind of go, oh, what's...
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of that. And,
yeah.
In fact, I had a friend called Brendan Neeland who painted buildings, but they tended to be office blocks, sort of glamorous office blocks. But I haven't really come across anybody else who's built up a serious body of work based on them at all.
No. I did notice downstairs, there's one of your pieces is in the permanent collection,
yes,
here, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Campbell,
yeah,
and I. Yeah. And I was just looking nearby, I noticed one by Doreen Fletcher.
Yes.
Who paints kind of shop fronts and,
yes,
business.
Yes.
Again, it's slightly the sort of the mundane stuff that we might overlook.
Exactly.
Do you think that there's a wider range of subject matter that the art world has changed in your lifetime that's...
Well, when I was a student, abstract expressionism was very much around, and painting had to look like painting. In other words, one had to be very much aware of the act of painting, and a lot of painting was about painting.
Right.
And I mean, that was the subject matter, really, and which was okay, but if you, when I was a student, was in art school and so on, if one started to paint too realistically what was around, you were maybe accused of copying,
right.
You know, which was not a good thing to do, I was told.
Okay.
And which, of course, it didn't really fit in the kind of modern movement, really.
Yeah.
And so, in those days, I mean, pop art was starting. I mean, I would be in shows. I mean, David Hockney and co. were, you know, at the Royal College when I was at the Slade and so on. We have combined shows together and things like that. And that, to me, was a bit of a revelation. And not so much what was happening here, but kind of when I saw American pop art, you know,
right.
You know, and that was a huge, huge, huge revelation that, okay, it was okay to copy.
Yeah.
And you could do it big, and there was nothing wrong with that. And so that, to me, opened a door. And so the early paintings I did at that time, or very shortly after, were based on suburban terrace houses. And so
right.
I would go up and down a particular road and just paint the next kind of 20-foot of house front.
Okay.
And they were... I had quite a lot of success with those pictures, and indeed they were the first ones I showed to an Andrew Flowers, my dealer. And I think their success was largely due to their scale, because when you looked at them, although they were kind of three-quarters life size, but seeing them in an enclosed space in a gallery, you know, they felt they were life size, basically.
Yeah. So you've always been drawn to the big stuff?
Yes, I always have. I mean, I've always... partly the fault of the Americans. I mean, I think that up until the Second World War, the whole development of art was based very much in Europe, you know, particularly in Paris.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the whole modern movement was, I mean, there were plenty of exceptions, but was basically easel painting scale. Was,
right.
And what happened after the war was that... they developed the early ideas which happened in the first half of the 20th century, but on a huge scale.
Yeah.
And I think if you wanted to be taken seriously through the sort of late 50s and 60s onwards, you had to sort of paint on that kind of large scale, basically.
Yeah.
And it also made it, I mean, not new. I mean, think of Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel and the Tintoretto's School of San Rocco and so on.
Yeah.
I mean, artists are always painted big.
Yeah.
But I just think during that period, I suppose, of Impressionism, Post-Impressionism, because people had to yank their paintings on and paint outside, you know, there was a kind of...
just sort of practicality.
Exactly. And a kind of acceptance that paintings were kind of easel painting size, basically.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I think we dotted around a bit chaotically as I remembered the things I wanted to ask, that's really fascinating.
Well, I've sort of very much enjoyed talking about them.
Good.
But, I'm just trying to think if there's anything that we maybe should have touched on.
Yes, anything else?
I mean, it has come up sometimes when I've had to do a talk about the work or do slideshows and stuff that... where there's a kind of political element.
Okay, yeah.
And some people, I mean, more than once, when I've had a show, people had left quite a long, angry note in it's sort of in the visitor's book about me maybe exploiting the people who live in them.
Okay.
And taking advantage of them, and here I am selling huge paintings for vast sums of money and so on.
Yeah.
But as I say, my only answer to that is that as I see them I think of myself as a landscape painter, and you know, it's largely my landscape.
That's the landscape.
Exactly.
Yes. And that's an intriguing question, I suppose, about, like, some of the character does come from what's inside the windows, if yes, you can see exactly what's inside the windows, but how much is that public space or private
exactly
space?
Yes, indeed. I mean, usually you can't get much from what's inside the windows. A, there's the scale. Even though one's painting a big painting, the scale of the windows are, you know, quite small.
Yeah.
And but I did have a student once who used to get, this was, I think he's in Swansea, he used to go out at night time and kind of act voyeurism, really. And, uh-huh, and he would walk around and I don't know whether he did drawings or took photographs, but he would base all his work on these kind of nighttime views, looking okay into people's windows, yeah, basically.
I used to do a regular walking tour that was round kind of Kensington Knightsbridge area in the evenings.
Yeah.
And it did seem to me there that there were quite a few people who had the lights on and the window, the curtains
yes, exactly
open.
Yes.
But it felt like they had such fabulous interiors that they were,
and they're showing them off.
Showing them off. It felt
yes, exactly,
okay to peer in those
exactly
circumstances.
Exactly. I mean, when I've been out there drawing or something, that, you know, kids have sometimes come up and said, "Why are you doing that?" And I said, "Well, I find them sort of interesting and beautiful in their own way," and they always seem surprised.
Okay.
But
but
on the other hand, if they see a painting and they enjoy kind of identifying with you, sort of where their flat is or
windows are. And have you ever lived in a have you lived in a tower block?
No, my son has, mm-hmm, and indeed still does, but I haven't.
No.
And again, on that point, that sort of political issue, shouldn't you be living in a tower block if you're going to kind of paint them, which is a valid thing to say, but I think it's a little bit like saying to Constable, well, shouldn't you be a farmer if you're going to paint, you know, sort of paint the landscape,
yeah,
or say to Turner, shouldn't you be a kind of sailor come weatherman if you're going to paint the weather and the sea and
indeed
stuff. But
yeah,
I think that people sometimes expect artists...
method artists,
yes,
to live
to
them.
Only the result of kind of how they're living or how, you know, should be living. And I think artists are much more as being kind of fairly detached observers, really.
Yeah.
And I can see both sides of that argument, but I think that there's nothing wrong with being a kind of an observer.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And not necessarily impartial, but...
No, exactly.
But, you know...
Yeah, detached.
Detached
really
is fine.
Exactly.
There may be some people doing that.
Quite.
Yes. Great. Well, thank you so much.
Well, I sort of very much enjoyed doing it.
Good.
Thank you.
Good, good.
And there we are. Huge thank yous to both Liz and David for coming to chat with me and being so generous with their time. David, actually, we recorded at the gallery, but once we'd finished, we walked around the exhibition space again, and he said a couple of interesting things. One was he was very pleased with the angle that the bird box was sitting at, because originally when this artwork went on display, the bird box was parallel with the two, three big main paintings. And now it's a bit of a cheeky angle. And he looked at that and he said, oh, that's much better. I'm very glad it's on that little angle. And then we walked around the corner and looked up at the Copley painting, the great big one. And he said, that is big, isn't it? It is big. So I said, are you tempted? Would you like to paint something on that scale? And he said, oh, well, So I think he was mulling over the practicalities of whether he possibly could find the space to do it. But there was a bit of a gleam in his eye. So he might have been considering it. So the Big City is on at the Guildhall Art Gallery until the end of July. It's 10:30 to 4 p.m. every day, and pay what you can. And of course, once you're there, you can have a look at the permanent collection as well. You can go down to the basement, see the Roman amphitheatre, and don't miss the Heritage Gallery with those mind-boggling things that get put on display there. We'll put some links and some of the images and things of the painting, so you know what we've been chatting about, in the show notes, so you can have a look at those as well. If you do go to the gallery, then go and find the mouse. And on that note, I'm going to say happy Easter to anyone who is celebrating this week. Have a very lovely week either way, and we'll see you again next week.